words matter. Okay, I'm going to back up and say, despite all my words saying there's a big difference between subrogation and right of reimbursement, I have to recognize that the Texas Supreme Court in 2018 said, there's no meaningful difference between those two terms. In fairness to the court, they were looking at the labor code, which does contain both of those terms and which uses them interchangeably. And so it was fair for the court to say that in Wausau versus Waddell. But I would argue that unless you have a plan or statute that uses them interchangeably, they mean different words. And that's what the Fifth Circuit said in a case involving Charla Aldous and her firm. Lots of detail about the case in the paper. Simply say that the court looked at a subrogation provision in Charla Aldous's policy and noted that it didn't have a right of reimbursement in it. So when the plan sued Charla and said, give us money that you got from a tortfeasor or from a dispute contract action, Charla said, you could have gone after it. You didn't. I did, but you don't have a right of reimbursement. And the Fifth Circuit said, that's right, National Assurance, her policy. If you wanted the money, get up off your National Assurance and go get it. There is a case pending that I think is a case to watch. It's out of Pennsylvania. It's an ERISA plan. Again, the plan had a right of subrogation, not reimbursement, then tried to get the money back from the plan beneficiaries. The plan beneficiaries turned around and sued and said, you can't take our money away from us. And the lawsuit has survived a 12B6 motion to dismiss. That's a case to watch. Let's look at Medicaid for that principle, and then we're going to talk about Medicaid in more detail in a minute. But for right now, I want to point out, okay, I'm going to use the word tantalizing, not a word often heard in subrogation matters. The U.S. Supreme Court, in the Allborn opinion, has a footnote that examines the statute. The statute granting Medicaid a right to subrogate does not also have a right of reimbursement in it. So the U.S. Supreme Court said, you know, in the Allborn case, nobody's brought this up, but the state is asking Heidi Allborn to turn money over to the state that Heidi and her attorneys got. That sounds like a right of reimbursement to us. Maybe they don't have a right of reimbursement. Despite that comment in a footnote, I haven't seen a case really dealing with that in the Medicaid arena, but somebody ought to go take up the court and say, did you mean what you said, that maybe there is no right of reimbursement? Okay, we're going to shift from words matter to the plaintiff's relationship to the subrogation interest or lien being asserted matters. If you have a child, if you have a injured person with a derivative claimant, such as a spouse, a parent, a child, or if you have a wrongful death cause of action coupled with a survival cause of action because the injured person died, those all get treated potentially differently under the law. I'm going to talk just a little bit about Chapter 140, Civil Practice and Remedies Code, that's been in effect since January 1, 2014. And I'm going to ping pong around some in this discussion, and I apologize for doing so, but I want to cover as much as I can. Chapter 140, passed by the legislature, regulates insurance. It regulates ERISA plans that are insured. It regulates self-funded plans that are governmental plans, and it sets out how to divide up the recovery if there's not enough money to go around. It sets out a common fund principle that says the plan that doesn't actively go get the money through its own attorney has to reduce by pro rata share of the attorney's fees and expenses. It limits an insured or non-ERISA self-funded plan from getting money from PIP or UM/UIM or MedPay. PIP never, UM/UIM and MedPay, not if the injured person or their immediate family bought the policy. If a stranger bought the policy or an employer bought the policy, then maybe, yes, there is subrogation. But the reason I bring it up right now is because it also says there can be subrogation if the injured person has an obligation or an opportunity to recover the medical expenses. Well, the flip side of that is if you're a child and the right of recovery belongs to the parent, not the child, for past medical expenses, or if you're a dead person and the right of recovery for past medical expenses belongs to the estate, but not to the wrongful death beneficiaries, then the plan should not be able to subrogate to the child's share of the recovery or to the wrongful death beneficiary's share. Let's talk a little bit more about children. First of all, footnote 19 to Allborn. You'll notice I'm talking more about footnotes in Allborn than the actual opinion.